And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT at 9.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And did I say CIUT? I hope I did. I'm rattled. I had a funny experience. I'm on the subway. A man stopped me and asked me if I wanted me to know that he thought I looked exactly like the first man to climb Everest. And I thought, well, this is I've never had this happen. Anyhow, he was quite mistaken. I would never go on Everest. Today we're going to talk to Philip Wileto, who is an editor of a popular paper in Richmond, Virginia, called the Virginia Defender. And Virginia needs a lot of defenders, in my opinion. Philip is part of an organization, the United National Action Coalition. They visited Odessa, Eastern Ukraine. Notice the directions, east, west. The reporting tends to differ depending on which side of the river you're on, like in many parts of the world. At any rate, he's going to tell us about his experiences. He wrote an article in Counterpunch titled "Eyewitness Odessa, Anti-Fascist Resistance in Ukraine." That's in the May 13 issue of Counterpunch. You can find that on the internet, a terrific journal founded by the great journalist Alexander Coburn. And at the halfway point, we're going to be talking to a Texas lawyer, Tom Moran. Tom Moran was one of the defense lawyers at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. He fought very hard for his client for a period of I think the trial started in 2003. It was completed. The final decision was 2013. And his client, Prosper Mugrineza, was acquitted of all charges, as were the three other defendants in the case. It's actually a major case, totally unreported now by all those in the West who said that we have to end the culture of impunity, and we have to have public trials, and the world has to learn all the profound lessons so that we don't have terrible events and genocides ever again. They always say this. However, in this case, four accused. The trial started in 2003, and it ended, in the case of Tom Moran's client, in 2013, and with an acquittal. Primary reason we're going to talk to Tom Moran is to ask him why it is that now, 3 years later, his client remains in, I would call it, semi-custody. He has not been able to return to his loved ones. I'm going to call it a legal limbo, and it is a disgrace to the international I don't like the expression international community, because everybody notices it doesn't seem to have a home address. There's the United Nations set this tribunal up. And now we have this situation where the tribunal did all of its work, and they have left a innocent person, someone they acquitted, with no remedy that I'm aware of. And we're going to ask Tom Moran how this could be. A terrible situation. Also want to tell our listeners, I know you're very interested in this, that Amy Goodman is going to be speaking at a CIUT benefit event taking place in the debates room at Hart House. It is sold out, but we are advising people to stay tuned, because there is some negotiations to try to find a larger venue. So I know the Democracy Now! Has a great following on CIUT. Many people would like to see Amy Goodman on this. She's making a 100-city tour to celebrate being on this program broadcasting for 20 years. It is a great moment. There is a book, I think, associated with it. And when I'm telling you two things, it is nominally sold out, but CIUT is diligently working so that there may perhaps be a larger venue, and therefore be able to accommodate more folks. So that's the good news, and I hope that you will keep track, keep list, stay tuned to CIT, and you will be able to maybe attend that. I'll also tell you that we often on this program speak to Canada Boat to Gaza. There is a women's boat to Gaza, and they have two. And we've on this show we spoke to Wendy Goldsmith, who informed us the crew and the captain, as far as I know, everybody on the boat is going to be a woman, and so this is going to be very interesting to see how they are greeted, because many have done this before, and there's been all kinds of altercations, and this will be taking place in the fall of this year, in September. So anyway, stay tuned for that. And I think we're joined now by Philip Willeto. Are you there, sir?
I am. How are you?
Very good. Philip, thank you very much for talking to us. You have an article just published in Counterpunch magazine titled Eyewitness Odessa, Anti-Fascist Resistance in the Ukraine. You were an eyewitness, and your article explains in detail what took place there. I hope people will find that. Incidentally, there's a great video which you provide. It's also part of the article. I really urge people to read the article and also see that video. You went with an organization, United National Action Coalition. How did the
United National Anti-War Coalition.
That's what I get for taking sloppy notes. How did you get involved with this issue?
Well, we work here in Richmond, Virginia, with a little community organization called the Defenders, for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. It's primarily based in the black community, and we work around issues affecting the working poor, like prisons and job discrimination, the Fight for 15, Black Lives Matter movement, and so on. And we've also always been involved in the anti-war movement. And back in 2010, we were one of the groups that helped form this United National Anti-War Coalition, which is made up of scores of groups across the country, some of whom work on anti-war peace issues, some of whom work on domestic issues, so we kind of work under the banner of Stop the Wars at Home and Abroad. We had a conference in Secaucus, New Jersey in May 2015, which was just a week or two after, I guess just a week after, this terrible incident that took place in Odessa in the country of Ukraine. I know this is not on most people's radar. It did get a little play at the time that there was a right-wing coup in the country, and a president who was oriented more towards Russia was overthrown and replaced by one friendlier to the International Monetary Fund and NATO and the U.S. and Europe, mm-hmm. Western Europe. And the Undersecretary of State, Victoria Nuland, bragged that the U.S. had spent $5 billion supporting that coup. And there were a lot of out-and-out fascist organizations involved. They didn't exactly take over the government, but they helped overthrow the past one. They have a lot of influence in it. And I mean real Nazi-type groups that model themselves on Hitler's party and even adopt some of the same symbols and so on, and a very extremely nationalist, xenophobic target the Russian minority in the country and you know, extol the Ukrainian collaboration with the Nazi occupation, which was opposed by the Ukrainian resistance. I mean, it was a really divided country.
Yes.
Those divisions continue today. So anyway, some folks from Odessa who had ties to people who were the victims of this massacre that took place on May 2nd, 2014, came to our conference and talked about what happened, later invited UNAC to participate in a European conference held in Poland of European progressives trying to regroup after, you know, 25 years after the collapse of socialism and now the rise of fascism across particularly Eastern and Southern Europe. And we met there with the same folks who had attended the UNAC conference, and they were telling us that the second anniversary of this massacre, in which 46 people were murdered by a fascist-led mob. They were chased into a building. The building was set on fire with Molotov cocktails, and people died from burns, smoke inhalation, jumping out of windows. Those who did escape, many of them were beaten to death. It's all on videotape. If you, all you have to do is Google May 2, 2014, Odessa, Ukraine, and all kinds of cell phone videos will come up. It's pretty clear what happened. And then that sort of in-depth documentary. So, you know, we said, geez, you folks seem to be in the worst situation of anybody here at the conference. Is there anything we can do to help? You know, we thought they would say, you know, yeah, you can write stories about it or a petition or, you know, something like that, or have a speaker come over. And they said, could you join us in Odessa on May 2nd? Because the memorial is being threatened by these fascist organizations. And they're talking about doing a repeat of what happened in 2014. So we said yes. And we also organized an international campaign around a statement supporting the right of the folks to have this. These are relatives and friends and supporters of those who were killed, to have a memorial in Odessa, that calling on the Ukrainian, U.S., and Odessan governments to ensure their safety, and supporting the demands of the folks who are organized as the Mothers Council on May 2. For an international investigation and bring the perpetrators to justice. They're not prejudging what happens. They said, let's find out exactly who was involved, who's behind this, because there's indication that it was pre-planned, and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah. By the way,
the government has opposed that.
Yeah. If I could just stop you there, I just want to make sure we tell our listeners that in reading your article, one learns that there have been some types of investigation, but there's no one has been charged. Not one person. Is that right?
No, that no one has been charged for perpetrating the crime, but many people were arrested at the scene who were in the building and who had escaped from the building, and some of those are still in prison.
The ones who were being attacked are the ones who are in jail?
Some of those, yes. Some of those. And many who were arrested were released under public pressure. It's interesting to note, too, that the city of Odessa is almost 25% Russian, ethnic Russian. It's about 65% Ukrainian, and the rest are small minority groups. And yet they elected, re-elected just a few months ago, a mayor who is opposed to the Kiev government. So it's an indication this doesn't break down strictly on racial lines.
That I found striking, by the way. And I just wonder, too, you were present there. It must be a very odd political climate. You have a mayor who is, as you say, he has difficulties with the provincial leadership or the central government?
It's complicated, but what it breaks down to is the mayor is somewhat sympathetic to the people who are demanding the international investigation. And when they come out and are attacked by the fascists, the police will often, not all the time, but often at least try to separate the groups. And when we talk about the groups, we're talking about, you know, young men on one side who often are in uniform and carrying sticks and even shields and makeshift weapons. And on the other side, you know, regular, average, everyday people of different ages, often they're in their 50s or 60s, they're not there to fight. You know, they're not prepared to fight. And so sometimes the police will keep the fascists away from them, but not arrest them. So there's some ambivalence there. The provincial governor is the former president of Georgia who got run out of that country after a series of corrupt charges.
My goodness, Saakashvili is in charge or has a job?
He's the provincial governor.
He's wanted, isn't he, in Georgia? There's a list of serious crimes.
That's right.
That must have been in his resume as proof that they should probably hire him. He's their kind of guy. Saakashvili, I'm shocked.
He fled to Ukraine does not have an extradition treaty with Georgia, so he fled to Ukraine and was appointed governor. Now he was claiming that the mayor wouldn't be able to prevent violence at the event, so he called on the president, who was installed by a right wing coup, to provide National Guard protection. So they sent between, I've seen the figures of both 300 and 500 National Guardsmen, but they were largely members of a group called the Azov Battalion, which is an out-and-out Nazi organization. Mm-hmm. They've been accused of war crimes in the fighting in the Donbas region in eastern mm-hmm. Ukraine. And these guys, I mean, they still sport the...
Is that fact in dispute at all? Is this a known fact?
Well, what's known is that it's a neo-Nazi organization. That its insignia is based on, I think it was called the Wolfgang Unit of the Nazi SS.
Mm-hmm.
It's extreme right wing, and it was incorporated into the National Guard after training by the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to keep their insignia. And this isn't something I read about. I mean, I'm watching these guys walk around the memorial flaunting their T-shirts with the insignia on, laughing at people and. They were there. So the tension building up to this memorial was really something. The city council went to court to try to stop the memorial. You don't need a permit to have a peaceful assembly in Odessa, but if the city wants to stop you, they have to go to court. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So they argued that there was a real potential for trouble, and that there would be international observers there. That picked up from the work that we were and others were doing, because there were international observers from many countries in Europe. So the Maidan forces, that's one of these Nazi groups, they said there's not going to be any memorial. They're going to make sure there's no memorial. And when the court refused to ban the memorial, that also meant that any other group could be there, because there was no ban on anyone. So the Maiden says, well, fine, we're going to have a program of our own. We're going to train young people in political military skills, and we'll be bringing machine guns and pyrotechnics, fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
So the court said, no, they can't bring the machine guns and the fireworks, but they could come anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then a group called the Brotherhood announced that they were calling on people from all over the country to come to Odessa and to attack the memorial. The Azov Battalion was sent into town early. They were patrolling streets, and there was a report the day before the memorial that they were going to set up checkpoints to stop people from coming into the city and see who they were. There were two German journalists and one Polish journalist who were coming to cover the memorial, who had written in an unflattering way about the Ukrainian government. They were stopped at the airport or border crossings and not allowed to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So when we landed there the night before the memorial, that was Bruce Gagnon, the national coordinator of the global network against weapons and nuclear mm-hmm. weapons in space, and Regis Tremblay, who's an independent videographer, both of whom are members of Veterans for Peace and affiliated with UNAC. The three of us showed up. We had no idea if we were going to get through the airport. People were supposed to meet us from Odessa, but we had lost contact with them. There have been a series of raids on activist houses, seizing computers and so on. The federal agency SBU, which is like their FBI, had announced they had found explosives in the square where the memorial was to take place, and they said they were linked to these anti-Maidan activists, meaning the people holding the memorial.
One of the mothers of the victims.
They just said anti-Maidan activists, which uh-huh. means the people who oppose the coup and uh-huh. are opposed by these fascist groups. And then they announced that they had received a bomb threat about the square, and they were closing the square from early morning till midnight of the day of the memorial, so people couldn't even get into the square. And they told Victoria Malutko, the president of the Mothers Council, to report for questioning on May 2nd, even though it's a holiday. They don't usually have police business on that day. And she was interrogated until 10 o'clock at night, so she never made it to the memorial herself.
Hmm.
But under all of these circumstances, and the 2,500 police were called out, the 300 to 500 members of the National Guard, there were snipers on the roofs. There's an open area just outside the gates where you can see the square called Kulikovo Square and the House of Trade Unions where the fire took place.
Mm-hmm.
from early morning, people started pouring into this area. We went out there twice, once in the morning and once for the 4 o'clock memorial. And I got up on a high spot and kind of counted by quadrants like you do when you're trying to figure how many people come to your protest. And I counted 2,000 people at that point in late morning. Mm-hmm. The organizers are saying there were 3,000 to 4,000 over the course of the day, and I think that's perfectly reasonable. And they just gathered. They gathered and they laid flowers. At 4 o'clock, they released some white doves and had some speeches and 300 black balloons, the symbols of the people who were murdered and wounded at the House of Trade Unions. And the courage. I mean, you're standing there, and you know this one group, Right Sector, who's you know another one of these fascist groups, stages a march right through the memorial. And they did it kind of quickly, so it made it seem to me like they weren't overly confident. But they did it, and like I said, there were individuals with these Nazi slogans, and there's the snipers on the roof, and there was a gang of the thugs that saw the bus that we came in on to the square with the mothers. We were asked to be on the bus with representatives of the Mothers Council, and these thugs saw us and realized who it was, and they started cheering and throwing the Nazi salute. Somebody threw something at the bus. But when we got to the actual memorial, the whole crowd just burst into these cheers, and people threw flowers in the air, and they parted, and the women were walking down, through this open corridor, to the center by the gates of Kolykovo Square. And it was such a mass outpouring. It wasn't like, some progressive groups had gotten together and managed to get 100 people to come out. This was, thousands of ordinary Odessans who were coming out in utter defiance of these physical violent threats. And not just at the memorial, but, how do you get to the memorial? How do you get home? How do you avoid being jumped? How do you avoid, it was truly inspiring. It was absolutely inspiring. And so what we decided to do, and if people who read the story in Counterparts, they know we didn't just go there to stand there, although that would have been good in and of itself.
Yeah, that's
it. We organized in
May 13, Counterparts.
I'm sorry?
I wanted to make people know that it's May 13, Counterpunch. They could find it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And so there was, that we did an international campaign with a statement supporting the right of the Mothers Council to hold a memorial, holding the U.S., Ukrainian, and Odessan governments responsible for their safety, and supporting the Mothers Council demand for an international investigation. And within 6 weeks, we got 150 endorsers from 22 countries in Africa, Asia, Europe, and North America, and sent that to the city government in Odessa. And we also hand-delivered it to the Ukrainian embassy in D.C. That was Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst and now prominent anti-war activist, and Anna Edwards from The Defenders, who's also a former administrative committee member of the UNAC coalition. And they delivered it and then held a press conference. And at the press conference was one of the people there was a reporter from TASS News Service, the Russian News Service. And the next day he was at a press briefing at the U.S. State Department. He asked Deputy Spokesperson Mark Toner about the massacre in 2014, about the lack of an international investigation, about the memorial to be held May 2nd, and about the threats against it. And Toner said, so this is on the record, that the State Department condemns the massacre, supports the call for the investigation, supports holding a commemoration of the massacre, and condemns threats against it. So that went out on YouTube pretty widely. And we hope, you never can be sure, and you shouldn't claim easy victories, but we hope that it had some effect on the U.S. deciding, look, there's going to be Americans at this thing. Nobody's paying any attention to Ukraine right now. They all forgot about this massacre. Let's make sure there's no incident and make sure no Americans get hurt, because then it'll be front page news. Mm-hmm. It's like white people going to the Deep South in the early 60s to do voter registration. Everybody knew why they were asked to come, because if they get hurt, it'll be news. So we went, to Odessa with our American citizenship as putting that super white skin privilege in One of the activists is coming to the U.S. This week and will be speaking at the Left Forum conference in New York City at a panel on Ukraine sponsored by UNAC. And people could just go on Left Forum 2016 and look for panels and look for Ukraine, and they can find out where it's going to be. Yeah. So we're traveling, some of us are traveling up from Richmond to New York to participate in that.
Sounds to me like actually your trip was valuable. You might have contributed to the safety of those demonstrators, and you are achieving some success. I'm particularly impressed that there's going to be someone coming from Odessa to the Left Forum. Can you tell us the organizations that people can get in touch with, or the sites and that kind of thing?
Yeah, we decided to continue this effort as a long-term effort for three reasons: to monitor the situation in Ukraine and particularly Odessa, to promote the demand of the Mothers Council for an international investigation, and to provide some support for the Odessa activists who are coming under increasing repression by the government. Victoria Malutsko, the president of the Mothers Council, has been banned from public speaking. And we're worried that the Odessan activists are worried that she's being set up for some kind of a terrorism charge, saying that, you know, they've raided her apartment twice, and so they're worried that they might have planted something there, and then we'll later say, you know, we found something, and that's dangerous. So they apparently they don't feel strong enough to arrest her just yet, but there's been some publicity around Odessa. If that dies down, then it becomes more dangerous. So under the name Odessa Solidarity Campaign, UNAC is going to continue with this. And all folks got to do is go on, just Google UNAC or United National Anti-War Coalition, and the contact information is there for the organization. And just drop an email and say you're interested, you know, you'd like to know what's going on, maybe help. We are going to compile, an email list of folks who are interested in the issue. We are following the lead of the Odessa folks, excuse me, who are, we want to see if the statement that we put together can be modified to concentrate on the support for the Odessan activists and the demand for the international investigation, and continue to circulate that and get more support for that. The Russian delegates on the Security Council at the UN raised recently, about 2 weeks ago, that the U.S., that the UN conducted an investigation of the 2014 massacre, and it went nowhere. And so I don't know if the UN is going to be a viable option. Victoria spoke before a meeting of the UN Human Rights Committee, meeting in Geneva, before the May 2 memorial, and we sent a letter of support that she referred to in her testimony there. But I don't know. I don't know if it'd be the movement of non-aligned nations, if there'd be some other international organization. If it comes down to it, I suppose we could consider, an independently organized investigation. And in fact, there's been several independent. I mean, that documentary that I referred to in the Counterpunch piece goes into a lot of various things that'll just say, wait a minute, that's not right.
Yeah.
You know, here's somebody who's supposed to be on the anti-coup side, who is photographed shooting a gun, but you see them standing around with the maiden fascists, putting on a anti-maiden emblem, and then going out into the fray. Now, what? Asian provocateurs has been kind of a modus operandi for these groups, so. There's footage from just passersby of young maiden women, like in the late teens or mid teens, lined up making Molotov cocktails like an assembly line.
Yeah,
I mean, somebody brought the material. Somebody organized people. Somebody for some reason the police did not intervene, even though they were there. It has the fingerprints of a planned attack.
Yeah. I'm afraid, Philip, we're going to have to leave it there. But, boy, you've given us a great outline. The main thing, listen, go to the articles in Counterpunch, May 13, and it's Philip Wileto. And it also includes, you can click on a terrific documentary, which is a part of that article. Philip, thank you very
much. That was done by a German journalist who was stopped at the airport and not allowed to go to Odessa. He was going to monitor it as well. UNACPEACE.org, UNACPEACE.org for more information.
Well, again, thank you, Philip Wileto. I hope to talk
to you
again soon.
I really appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Take care.
And it is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And we're going to be speaking, I think we might be, I'm going to consult. We're going to take a break, and then we'll come back. We're going to talk to Tom Moran, a lawyer from the International Criminal Tribunal.